You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 2014 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. This is the fourth class in a series given by Brother Bruce Parker on the subject, The Parables, A Closer Look. This class is titled, Servant Parables. But first, watch the video of the modern-day Good Samaritan.
So obviously Bruce ran out of material, so he decided to standard teacher technique, show a movie. Or maybe there was another reason. What was that? Good Samaritan. Yeah. So who did these characters equate to? Maybe I'll just make that. Who do these characters equate to? Who was the first guy? What can you tell me about the guy in the car with the kid? Who was he?
He was a doctor.
He was a medical doctor. And a deacon. Yeah, take the deacons want you to take the fellow out to breakfast. Yeah, okay. And his son brought his attention to the injured man. And what did he have to say?
He made a judgment down.
He made a judgment that this guy is...
Yeah,
drunk and responsible for his own condition, and that's what alcohol does to you. It makes you bleed. He just, you know, standard stuff. No big deal. Don't worry about it. And then along comes somebody else. Who is the somebody else? Yeah, the youth minister, sure. And how'd he do? A little better, yeah. What influenced his decision? Yeah, he heard from the kid that the doctor had said alcohol responsible for himself.
He might have thought that the doctor had actually got out of the car and
sure,
checked him out
sure.
So that it was an
yeah. What may have occurred that's not recorded for us in the parable, in the Bible, that might equate to that? Oh yeah, he was beaten up, but the decision that the second one makes in the video is somehow related to the decision the first one made. Yeah, he may have been aware that the first guy was going in the distance, and if he's going in the distance, he obviously came by, and if he's not here helping, he obviously decided it wasn't an intervention required. Do we ever get influenced by other people's decisions on a topic? Do we ever fail to really thoroughly investigate because somebody's already made the call that we respect?
No.
Okay, well, you know, 1 out of 70. And go ahead, Marco.
Well, there was also the awareness of the Mediterranean guy that looked like a terrorist. And he
looked like a Mediterranean guy that looked like a terrorist. Sure.
In the Samaritan, it was where thieves and robbers were, you know, after thieves and robbers.
Sure.
But this person, I think, was also viewed as that way.
Why did we come to the conclusion that he was a Mediterranean potential terrorist?
Reading
in Arabic, I presume.
The way he looked and the reaction
his appearance, the father's reaction, the doctor's reaction, the security guy, right? When I was a teacher, yeah, he's driving a cab. And what else was he doing? For goodness sakes, we know about those people, right? Okay. When I was a teacher, I had this look that I used to give to my students that they called the hairy eyeball. You know, when they were getting out of line, I'd just give them that look and they'd quiet down. Yeah, but you could see all these white guys are giving this Mediterranean guy, this hairy eyeball, right? They're giving him the look. And, yeah, why might he have, he being the Good Samaritan, he being the taxi driver, why might he have helped out where the others didn't? Was he just raised better? You know, in Mexico, they have a term called sin madre. It's a really disparaging term about a person. I mean, you better be ready to fight if you're going to say this about somebody. It means they were raised without a mother. No mother, you know. So did he just happen to have a mother and the others missed out or so? What do you think?
I'd say he's probably suffered a bit of persecution himself, like getting the hairy eyeball.
Thank you. Thank you. It took a sister in our community who is euphemistically referred to as a sister of color who had to point that out to me. Yeah. He suffered persecution, and so he didn't like seeing other people suffer. And he was more ready to intervene because of what he had experienced himself. You think that's true? Do you think going through the fire ourselves can help us be more compassionate for those that are going through the fire, Sean? Sometimes it doesn't.
And sometimes people that have been through something can be very judgmental.
Yes? Sure. Or I made it through. What the heck is your problem? You know?
Well, yeah. Well, they also like to think that the people who are in that situation, having been persecuted, are somehow different from them. You know, well, I wouldn't have walked through that alley at night.
Sure. He must have been stupid. He must have. Sure. Right. Right. We know that you probably know with your background in law, but we have a whole history of blaming the victims. And women who suffer sexual attacks and stuff. Well, look what she was wearing, you know, just all this. So I'm sure this guy was responsible for being in the alley. He's a new guy.
And so if he goes against what the deacon had judged, you know, that might endanger his position.
Right. If he goes against what the deacon had called, it's in danger. Do you think that ever happens in our community? That it takes enormous courage to stand up and do the right thing. Get slapped down and stand up and do the right thing. Absolutely. Youth minister distracted by his responsibilities. Legitimate concerns. Doctor's distracted by his responsibilities. He's got an operation, for goodness sakes. He's not going to make his 7 o'clock meeting. I pity that lady on the other end of that phone call. You know, well, you're right, though. Nowadays, names can go... Okay. He did. He turned away a fare. He said, there's a taxi cab stand up down up in the corner. Sure, he's willing to help, but he's going to take care of this man. He's going to make it a priority, even when it impacts his income. And went back for him the next day. And I got to tell you, I've watched that thing about 40 times, and I always cry when the old man... Yeah.
That was something that I thought about because...
What did the boy think about his dad?
He saw him in the elevator and saw the cab driver who he obviously recognized as having been the one that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cab driver probably recognized him if he saw him.
Sure.
Hiding himself a bit. But what would you think about your father? Well, gee, you know, too bad my dad didn't stop ahead of time. He might not have had to come into the hospital or...
Yeah. Why does this potential terrorist step up when my dad, the deacon doctor,
didn't?
Yeah. He's worried about my two drops of iodine and yes?
I missed the beginning of it, so the little boy, I don't know what the little boy did. So the little boy was the
That's perfect. Who is the little boy who's son of the deacon, the medical doctor?
I missed that.
Yeah. Okay. But what role does the little boy play in this video? Who is he? He's us. He's us. He's watching this whole thing unfold and seeing it and the lessons that he learns. Yeah. Hopefully he has compassion on his dad and said, you know, my dad's busy. He could have intervened. He would have been the perfect person to intervene. He's a medical doctor. I think I'll go home and talk with Dad about this, you know? Kyle?
There's no hardcore evidence in the video to lead to this conclusion, but the old man looked Jewish to me as well.
Isn't that interesting? The old man looked Jewish. The old man looked like an old man. Like an old man that's had a rough night, and who knows whether he's responsible, you know?
Well, it looked like he wasn't, and I know this is going to come strangely from the person that can't see anything. Did you notice there was a Greyhound ticket and a walking stick next to him?
And so toys for children and books for grandchildren.
I suspect, and then the Greyhound went across the end of the alley.
Yep.
And I suspect he was trying to make it to the Greyhound when whatever happened, he fell or got
hit. Sure. He's on.
I think the indication was it wasn't his responsibility that he ended up that way.
Yeah, we didn't see any broken bottle there or
anything.
Stuff all spewing around like somebody was searching through it, trying to steal. Yeah. Sorry.
This is the first time I've gotten this out of it, but I've seen it 10 times.
Yeah.
Is that the taxi driver also made a judgment. He said, tough night, huh? And yet he still...
He hung in there, even though he said, tough night, old man, or something. But and when did it change? When was the moment that it changed?
When he discussed that he was truly injured.
Yeah, you'd have a hard time falling on your face and on the back of your head at the same time.
Right, like the people that
die
of two self-inflicted
like
gunshot
like
wounds.
Exactly.
See, yeah. Why?
Because he was concerned, I think.
Maybe.
Well, and he was used to it, but he was very observant,
sure.
Much more than anybody else. He wasn't distracted. You know,
right.
He might have been reading the newspaper, but he was like...
Right. You think a Samaritan might have been on high alert?
High alert, yes.
In Jewish territory? Sure. Yes?
Did the doctor say, or the nurse came out and said that he had a brain bleed? Is that what she said?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's a little unusual that they're going to release him tomorrow with these severe... Sure, he could have died. He very easily could still have died. Yeah, that's... Yes?
My heart was kind of convicted because, you know, I walk by homeless people a lot.
Sean has just confessed that he walks by homeless people a lot. Yeah. Well, how do we decide when somebody doesn't deserve our help, right? Okay. I got to tell you, if my wife is driving alone on the highway and somebody is pulled off the highway and is kind of signaling for help, I'm not wanting my wife to stop. But I would certainly want her to 911 now that we have the technology, you know. Maybe that's sexist of me. But, you know, there's appropriate things. Joan? He watched, he observed for a while. Sure. And at some level, we think maybe he was thinking, why aren't they helping?
Why,
the guy stops and kind of kneels down and looks him over and walks away. Why isn't somebody helping? Sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, it's a dangerous world out there.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. A new principal moved into the position at our local high school in our little town of 1,200 people. It's a supervisory union, so it gathers students from the area. And he wanted to know something about our town. And he said, who's the oldest, longest resident of this little town? And what was her name? She lived over. Yeah, she lived over on Grafton Street. Okay. And she was 90-something, and he went to visit her. He said, can I come? I'm the new principal or whatever. Can I come in and chat? And she said, sure. And he said, what's the biggest change in your lifetime? And she said, there's no such thing as neighbors anymore. She said, when I was a young lady, I occasionally did something that wasn't exactly appropriate. And anybody in town felt free to say to me, your parents wouldn't want you doing that. Why don't you go home now? And, you know, not that they would intervene and spank or, you know, and we're appropriately afraid of strangers and we teach our children and stuff, but it's a changed world. You're right. But still, we need to find ways to express our compassion. Even though his first impression, maybe this guy was drunk, maybe he was deserving, maybe there were self-inflicted wounds, still willing to step up. Yep.
Yep. That would have been weird to me. But I mean, 911 would have been my first thing. Oh, dude, we're getting some action here.
So there you go.
But you have skin in the game then. Because no matter what it is, you're now going to have to stop. You're going to have to wait. You've connected with this person. And, you know, what you have to understand is, too, when you go to help people, your limitations, because I'm not a doctor.
Right.
I shouldn't take the doctor role. But
right.
I can get a medical person involved.
Right. Sure. And you can get sucked in. You know, there's a situation and somebody in the ecclesia needs your help and you go and help. Who's the first person they're going to call the next time they need help? You know, because you've helped them once.
What happens when they tell you their problem and you don't have a clue?
Right. Right. Right.
You want to help. But
absolutely. And you just don't have the tools in your toolbox, but you can help them find somebody that has the tools. Right.
Solution.
It is not a drive-by solution.
Right.
It's a stop and get some skin in the game. You know, that point where he pulls his hand out behind his head and it's covered with blood.
That was gross.
Well, it's gross, but it's also, what do they teach caregivers when that happens?
Well, I had that bottle of water.
Exactly. Get that off you, glove up, you know, get ready. Yes, they do. Good Samaritan laws to protect the person that tries to help out. If they're making what a reasonable person would do in that circumstance, right? If I got to tell you,
suing people for being, for having helped them, you know, and
right.
moved them when they shouldn't have moved them or whatever and got further injured.
Absolutely. So the victim never speaks in a way that we can hear. I think it makes a point in the parable that the person doesn't have any clothes that you could identify them with. It's not obvious who the person is, whether they merit our help because we're connected in some way. It's just, it challenges us to get outside our box and show some compassion. Yeah. What role did the boy have? He was us. He was observing. Yeah. Samaritans. Yes. Oh, why don't I thank you? Somebody was up here messing with this. Blame the helper. Good Samaritan law here. Yeah. Uh-huh. Look at that. You're looking at what you need to look at, and I'm looking at something different. And that's good. That's good. Okay. How do Samaritans come out in the Gospels? How do Samaritans in general? Not good?
No, I think quite well.
Quite well. Well, there it goes.
Yeah, but they're outcasts too.
Socially, they're outcasts. The Jews hate them worse than they hate most people because they have the most in common. Oh, we don't do that. Do we? Okay. Why do you think they come off looking good?
Because that's the first missionary journey that Jesus took and instructed his disciples to take it in.
Right. How many people do we know whose actions and words led directly to the conversion of an entire town? I would say her and perhaps Legion, if you follow that story through. You know, Samaritan and probably a Gentile. Yeah. What other Samaritans do we know that come off looking pretty good?
Acts 8.
Which is?
Philip.
Okay. Say again.
The woman with the crumbs.
Yeah, the woman. She's spectacular. She's got a daughter that needs help. The help that only Jesus can provide. And Jesus says to her what sounds like an arrogant remark. I'm only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Is that the one?
Yes.
Okay. And she says to him, even the puppies get the crumbs off the table. Right? She told him a parable. She told him a parable. And she got Jesus. And he asked her the question, I think, so his disciples could understand what quality of woman was coming to ask. And he granted her request. Any others? Samaritans? Something about 10 lepers?
One that was a Samaritan.
Sure. 10 lepers cured. They all go. He says, go show yourself in the temple to get the official blessing that you're no longer leprous. Could the Samaritan do that? No, he wasn't welcome in their temple. So he comes back to the real temple, the real high priest. Thank you, Lord. Yeah, Samaritans come off looking pretty good because he's trying to make a point, right? He's trying to challenge us to think outside that box. There's a seminary story that I first heard right here at Manuka. You can download this on the internet. It said it's a famous seminary experiment. It's dated 1973, you know, back when they gave you your graduation diplomas carved on stone and you celebrated eating brontosaurus steak and stuff, you know. Okay. So they recruited a bunch of seminary students who presumably would be knowledgeable about things like a simple parable by Jesus, right? And the question was about this Good Samaritan thing. What possessed the priest and the Levite to pass by the injured man by the side of the road? Can we create a sociological, you know, scientific experiment to see what it is about human nature that contributes to what Jesus pointed out through this parable? And they had some hypotheses that people with religious helping thoughts would be likely or not so likely to help, right? Which would you expect? People with religious background and would hopefully be more likely to help, you know? People in a hurry might be less likely to help, yeah? And people whose religion somehow related to the Samaritan views of religion might be more likely, as opposed to those who were of the priest and Levite inclination. You know, so they had some hypotheses. They recruited seminary students for a study, they were told, on religious education. They had to complete a personality questionnaire about their religion, and personality questionnaire and questionnaires about their religion. And then they began the experimental procedures in one building and then were told to go to another building to continue. On the way, they encountered a man slumped in an alleyway. The victim's condition is unknown. Is he hurt? Is he drunk? Who knows? And they had varied amounts of urgency that they were told before sending them to the other building. And there was a difference in the task they had to do when they got there. One task, for example, was to prepare a talk about seminary jobs. And the other task was to prepare a talk about the story of the Good Samaritan, right? So you obviously that's your task. You're thinking about it. In one condition, subjects were told they were late. In another, they were told they had some time. A few minutes. Don't worry about it. And they passed by this guy slumped in the doorway who moaned and coughed twice as they walked by. Results. The amount of hurriedness induced in these students had a major effect on their helping behavior, right? So 40% offered some kind of help to the victim. But if they were not in a hurry, actually two-thirds of them stopped to help. Whereas if they were in a real hurry, lots of pressure, 10% stopped to help. Where, by the way, were the priest and the Levite going? Were they on the way up or on the way down? Yeah? Okay. So it implies they were done with their responsibilities and heading home. Yeah. There was no correlation between religious types and helping behavior. So religious types and non-religious types, people that talked about themselves in helping ways or not helping ways, no effect on the outcome in terms of how many helped. So, a person in a hurry is less likely to help. Some literally stepped over the victim on the way to their next building. Thinking about norms does not imply they will act on them. Ethics become a luxury as the speed of our daily life increases. How do you like those statements?
Scary.
How many of you think they could possibly be true of you? As the pressure's on, got deadlines, you're at work and you go into some place and somebody says, "Have you got a minute? I really need to talk to you. Thursday at 3. You know? Okay. Yes? Please. As a matter of fact, here.
There was a church down in North Carolina that commissioned a statue of Jesus portrayed as a homeless person, and it was very, very realistic. And one of the members of the church actually called the police on Jesus.
So why did Jesus teach these parables? To help us see ourselves and to help us change. Is there anything that we can extract from the parable of the Good Samaritan and the video? And people have been very gracious and said to me, "Bruce, I really enjoy your class." And I always, if they don't volunteer it, I say, "What's your takeaway? What are you going to remember?" Okay? So about this parable, what do you think you might be inclined to try to change as a result of thinking more deeply about the parable of the Good Samaritan? What do you think, Randy?
Pay more attention to what's going on around you as far as the people.
Be more aware of the people.
Don't be in such a hurry.
Don't be in such a hurry that you can't help. And if you're going to help, don't be drive-by.
Don't be just half-in, because if you are, you're not helping.
Yeah.
You have to be all in and realize that if you're going to do this, you need to do it 100%.
Right.
And it's
going to
cost you.
And it's going to cost. Right. One of my professors at graduate school told me about meeting his future mother-in-law, who was a Southern Belle. And as he left, she came out on the porch and said, "Y'all come back now." And he knew that if he never came back, that would be just fine with that lady, you know? We don't want to do these token things. "Call me if you need anything." You know? "No, come on, show up like the guy did. Come back to the hospital."
Samaritan in that.
Right.
You know, it was
people who look different.
Watching that security guard eyeing that guy in the hospital.
Absolutely.
And, writing notes and right. making him feel so uncomfortable sure. that he put his magazine down and walked away.
Yep.
So there's that lesson too, I think.
Right. Vermont happens to be the whitest state in the Union. I'm not talking about the snowfall, right? So it's real easy to grow up. It's real easy to grow up in Vermont, ignorant, or worse, about variations in human beings. Right? Our son Matt, who had his 40th birthday yesterday, yeah, he thanked us. He thanked us for taking him to Mexico as a young boy. So that he was in the American school there. He ran on a four-man relay team with two Japanese, a Mexican, and himself. You know, just he said in the work he has now is in an administrative position in a school system in a large city. And he said, I meet all kinds of people. And he said, they're just people to me because I had that experience. That's good. Yes, Paul.
This parable is an answer to the question, who is my neighbor?
What is the answer to the question, who is my neighbor? But what is the answer? Yeah, who would you be willing to accept help with if you were the victim? Anybody. Please help me. Who are you willing to help if they're the victim? Anybody.
So I, you know, as I think about that question, you know, he's answering that question, who's your neighbor, because the guy is seeking to justify himself. He picks the worst possible person for this person to say, that guy's my neighbor. Just preface that by saying you need to love your neighbor. And so what I take away from this parable is that not be so judgmental of people. I try to think about people that maybe our community despises, like homosexuals and other lifestyles that we would not think compatible with a life in Christ. And to me, Jesus is telling me, you love that person. Love that person. The person that maybe really
right. You need to love them. In fact, if you're having a hard time loving them, what does Matthew 25 tell us? See in them Jesus Christ. If you wouldn't do it for them naturally, find a way to do it for them because they're Christ. Serve them. Comments? Let me just see. We see some of this material's been covered already in second period. So, you know, exactly. Look at we're just scooting right through. Right, yeah. You know, the whole one of the things that the parables challenge us to think about is what's ours and what's God's. Right? They said. Should we pay taxes to Caesar, right? They had him. They just had him. And he said, show me a coin. What was on the coin? Caesar's image. And he said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God's. What did he mean by that? What's God's? Us. Why are we God's? We're in his image, right? This has got the image of Caesar. Give it to Caesar. You've got the image of God. Give it to God. Sure. Yeah. So I told my students today in my first period class that one of the most precious things I have right now is time. You know, I don't necessarily have that much time left. There's people in this room that you look on an actuarial table and you've got less time than I do. Statistically, right? Some of you may have a little bit more, but time gets more and more precious as you have less and less of it. Yeah. How do you feel about tithing your time? I'm not talking about the sleeping time. I'll sleep from 11 to midnight for God. No, I'm not talking about that. You know, how many hours is there in a week? 168? Okay, we'll go with that. And you sleep, how many of those? So we're down to around 100 hours left. And how many hours do you typically work? 40-something, you know, depending on your job. And you commute and you eat and stuff. And finally you carve it all down and you got something like an amazing amount of time, 35 hours that are yours each week to do what you want with. And what do you do with it? There you go. Thank you very much for a little reality check. You know, we've had a number of conversations this week and past weeks at Bible school with moms with young children and dads with young children, and absolutely, that's your first mission work. The time you're spending with your children is tithed to God. That's your first mission, sure. But, you know, you think about all that time when we get beyond that stage, and especially when you get to our stage in life, and, you know, how do you give back? How do you say thank you? How do you show? How can it be costly? David Levin talked about tithing, and he said it's not really tithing until it costs. That's my paraphrase. Till it hurts, he said. That's right. So it's not really tithing till it hurts. If you give of your excess, like the rich men throwing into the box, that didn't hurt. That's their spare change. And who was the contrast? The widow. How much did she have? How much did she give? How could somebody be that stupid? How could she do that? Because she trusted that somebody was going to take care of her. To be continued.